Microphone check, 1, 2, 1, 2. Okay, we are in. Despite this being extremely difficult, we are now recording. Okay, but we shall overcome. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast. This is Two Broke Twimbos. Now, I don't have my usual doohickeys connected as I normally do. So please bear with me as I do some sort of version of our intro, all right? And then I'm going to introduce you to the lovely guest that we have. Phil is not available this week. Last week, I was not available. Ironically, the reason I was not available is because I was at a dinner at the same place that my guest today was at. So I couldn't record last week. So Phil recorded with someone else. He's unavailable this week. Can you see the desire for consistency? We want to give you content. So even though there's all these problems, we're still going to record. But to my man over here, by the name of Savan, are you
good to go? Sound of the
them. I am good to go.
Mark, no.
Let me hear a drum play.
Right. What? No, I mean,
was it smooth? A dramatic intro.
It gets worse. You'll hear the final version of it. I just don't have the usual connections that I normally have because of this whatever problem we're having. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Wagwande, welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast. My name is Danny That Guy, a.k.a. Denias, a.k.a. Danos the Mad Titan, a.k.a. Look, at least I didn't make it to the sanctions list, all right? A.k.a. Akuna Mumundi Danmo. And I'm here with a special guest. This is going to be a great episode, hopefully a somewhat nerdy episode. So let me give you just a little bit of the backstory. See, what happened is last week I traveled to Cape Town. I was there for a media conference and I happened to meet several people that are in the realm of media. So today when I found out that Phil was not able to record, I was like, let me just try and see if I can and grab this person, which honestly, it was a long shot because I didn't think you would be available. You are a very busy man, after all, but you graciously agreed to come through. So the person we're going to be speaking to, it's not really an interview. He's basically going to be taking Phil's place for today. He's the co-host of the podcast today. A podcast he knows nothing about. His name's Savan Pillay. He's up until last week was the CEO of Trace Studios. And Trace Southern Africa, is that correct?
Yeah, Trace Studios mainly, but yeah.
Trace Studios mainly. He's a man who's been in the business of producing film and television for a long time. And he's obviously very well connected to music. Used to be on radio before. I'll allow you, obviously, during the course of our conversation to let us hear a little bit about your story. And I thought, man, there's very few people who will give as much of informed takes about African media in general as someone in your position who's been in, what, like 30 years in the game now? 20, 30 years in the game?
Yeah,
so you're super connected to the world of African media, and that's something that we talk about quite regularly on this podcast. So very welcome to the podcast. But like I promised, this is not an interview, so I'm just going to go ahead with how we normally.
No, cheers, man. Listen, I'm really excited to join you and your listeners. I hope we can be as insightful as possible and have some fun.
Great, that's what I love to hear. All right, cool. So let me just get my notes in front of me here that I can then use. So we normally like to start this podcast with a celebration of an African somewhere in the world who's doing it big. So this is primarily a Zimbabwean podcast, but we're trying to put a spotlight on Africa as a whole. So let me start off with Zimbabweans doing it big and Africans doing it big across the world. By the way, I will throw some questions to you, but obviously wherever you want to throw your input in, it's always very welcome. So big shout out to Zimbabwean footballer Trey Nyoni. He's only 16 years old and he made history as the youngest player to play in the Carabao Cup, I believe, when he came on as a substitute for Liverpool. So congratulations to Trey Nyoni. By the way, Trey Nyoni is like, yo, I mean, my parents are Zimbabwean, but I'm from Liverpool. So cool story. Also want to give a big shout out to two authors, both Zimbabweans as well, Simbarashe Kundizeza and Chioniso Tsikisai, who made it to the long list for the 2024 Island Prize. They are authors that are chosen from all over Africa. So two authors from Nigeria, two from Zimbabwe, one each from Angola, Ghana, Gambia, Zambia, and South Africa, as well as Egypt, made it to the shortlist. So it will be interesting to see who finally gets the full prize. But congratulations to those authors doing great things as well. Sivan, here's the truth. We normally like to start with that because it's like very often the only point of positivity in the whole podcast. So we start with celebrating someone, then we get into the mess. By the way, last week on the podcast, we had Plot Marco, a commentator on media and culture. And I hope you found it very entertaining. This week, we're having something similar, but from a different territory. Probably very well versed in Southern Africa, Africa, and especially South Africa as a whole. So that's the whole situation. Hey, Sivan, maybe we can start here, just so that we all understand your chops. You know what I'm saying? So I did introduce you as the outgoing CEO of Trace Studios. What were you doing? That sounds very high and lofty. CEO of Trace Studios. Yo.
It sounds high and lofty indeed. But I mean, listen, I've got a history of being in this industry and kind of leading organizations. Before I came into Trace Studios, I set up my own company called Zero Gravity TV and Media. And I kind of put that on ice for 2 years while I did a restructured job for Trace Studios. Mm-hmm. And now all I've done from the 1st of March is actually continue with Zero Gravity TV and Media, which is doing what we were doing, creating, producing, and distributing African content in Africa and around the world. So, yeah, it's like a continuation of the journey. So it's not a new journey for me. We just took a break for 2 years to focus on somebody else's business, but now it's kind of back to square one and focusing what we do best.
Very cool. Always best to do your own thing. But does this mean the NDA from Trace is no longer applicable?
Oh, that's exactly right.
Hey, names are about to be named. No, I'm kidding. How, obviously, most people, when they hear the name Trace, they will think of the TV channel that plays music. Were you involved with that or connected to it at all?
Yeah, I was. I think when I started with Trace, I kind of oversaw I looked after the Trace Southern Africa business, which is 4 channels,
yeah,
and the Trace Studios business. You know, I mean, Trace as a brand, one of the great points of appeal is that culturally, it is completely and 100% dedicated to the African diaspora. And I can tell you, even in the 2 years that I was in there, that is absolutely true. I mean, I think what they set out to do and achieve and how they represent African music, African culture around the world, I think is incredible and inspiring. And I hope it continues and I hope it's very successful for them. You know, the Trace Studios itself is a very different business inside Trace. It kind of doesn't sit inside Trace.
Yeah.
You know, Trace for all these TV channels. Trace Studios is a kind of a production business, but not producing for Trace.
Yeah.
So it was a more complicated business and hence it needed a restructure. And that restructure is really reorganizing it so that it can produce more content, music-related content for Trace.
Okay.
But things like docies and things, you know.
So if I understand correctly, so Trace, the TV channel, which most of us know and love and put on in the background, you know, while we want some hot music playing, etc., you were involved, you oversaw the Trace Southern Africa channels, but your main day-to-day was Trace Studios, which created original content that actually didn't play on Trace, because I mean, Trace was mainly music videos, right?
Yeah, correct, yeah.
So,
a lot of our stuff went out into SABC, MultiChoice, ETV.
Okay.
Those are kind of the key players that we work with on a more regular basis. But you can see it's kind of disconnect having all these 27 channels around the world, and almost 0% of its content is produced by the only production entity that it owns.
That's kind of weird. This is great for me because this means that because you were, number one, you were overseeing a music channel, and number two, you were overseeing a production studio. You have insights in both music and TV, film/TV.
It's the peanut butter and the jam.
Love it. So may I begin with music?
Yeah, sure.
So that's something that we focus a lot on this podcast. This is not an interview. I just want your takes on some popular things that happen.
So shoot away.
Congratulations to Tyler on winning a Grammy. We spoke about her 2 episodes ago on this podcast, and we were both talking about, shout out to Tyler. It's impressive the work that she's done and how her song blew up so much that it got to a stage that she won basically the pinnacle of music.
Yeah.
But something that we did also discuss on this podcast ever so briefly, because we didn't want to focus on the negativity. We were pushing P, you know what I'm saying? Is some people feel that pop music, which is what Tyler makes. She's a very good pop artist, right? And of course, Amapiano and so on is fused into it, but ultimately she's making pop music. Some people feel that it doesn't take as much talent as it does to make other genres of music, for example. And I think because there's a mentality of, the cookie cutter, the labels just find just some kind of template, stick whoever looks good and can dance good in there, and then, you know, out on the assembly line comes the next track and the next track and the next track, until you can no longer tell the difference between different songs. I personally am of a different opinion. I do believe that there is a certain amount of templating and the production line for pop music, but I do think it takes incredible talent to reach the pinnacle, to be super successful, to build a name brand for yourself, a la Taylor Swift or Dua Lipa or whatever the case is. I just want to hear your opinion as someone who's overseen a TV station that's primarily playing music, a lot of pop music, actually. What are your thoughts on talent to make?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think it's an interesting proposition, I think, that you put out there. There's so many factors that go into the potential success or lack of success of an artist, any artist. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you this. I mean, before I got into television, I worked in the music industry. I worked with EMI at the time, which is now incorporated into Universal. And I was a label manager. So I had to kind of pick what got released and what didn't get released. And I can tell you, you use a lot of insight, analytics, knowledge, experience, intuition. But somebody like Tyler, for example, let's assume Tyler was released 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Tyler would not have been recognized. Tyler would not have won a Grammy. Tyler would have been nowhere.
Yeah.
Tyler would have been no one. Because have we had more talented artists than Tyler come through Africa over the last 10 years? The answer is yes. So music industry is about talent. It's about having the right product at the right time. And that's a degree of luck involved too. So, you know, we've had incredible artists in Africa over the last, for some time, actually. All the factors kind of played in Tyler's favor. And once again, I'm saying the first box to tick is talent. So the first part, you're going to be talented. You've got to execute a great production. It's not just her as a singer, but the production team that put together her music is really good. It's pop, but it's got a lot of, I mean, there's Afrobeats in there. There's kind of all things, you know, there's good vibes in that there, but there's good vibes in a lot of songs. So what happened with Tyler? My view is that it's a combination of timing, having the right people listen to it, and most importantly, having the right people play it and support it. So you can't discredit the amount of energy that's got to go into, especially artists who do it themselves, where they're using their social media followings to kind of build organic and native followings on their sites. All of those things, factors have got to play in order to get A, airplay, B, recognition, C, sales. All of these things have to culminate kind of at the same time. Now, if one thing is missing, the artist is not successful. And then we go, oh, you remember so-and-so, they were fantastic. I wonder why they didn't succeed. Well, all those things were not lined up. And Tyler, for her, everything was lined up at the right time. What has come before Tyler is also very important. Remember, Zakes Bantwini and Black Coffee have also recently won Grammys. Mm. So there's a precedent being set, and there's a gaze on the southern part of Africa is that it could potentially unearth talent. And if that gaze, it could be South Korea, by the way, but it happens to be the southern part of Africa.
Mm.
Or it's Africa in general. I think Afrobeats and Amapiano have laid a kind of massive platform for the world to be open to listening to music and beats that come from this continent. And suddenly are accepting it, embracing it, and actually using it. So 5 years ago, could this have happened? The answer is no, but it happened now because this was the time that it was meant to.
Hmm. That is a very sensible take, I think, and I agree with it. But that does open up a follow-up question about the world is not paying attention to African music because there's some kind of kumbaya feeling and we're hoping to, inject love and warmth into Africa.
Obviously, for sure. Listen, it's good. It is incredibly good.
Yes. My worry is what, okay, here are these behemoths. You mentioned Universal, that EMI is now part of, or any of these major labels across the world. Their entire
Sony,
goal is
profit. Warner, yeah, wherever it is. Yeah.
Their primary goal is profit, obviously. We get to benefit because there's big machines behind it, there's money behind it, it can lead to development and so on. But I think we also need to be somewhat strategic, right? People like yourself who are in very strategic positions to a certain extent myself as well, where here's Universal coming in with big budgets and big plans and big strategies to Africa because they see that's the only growth market left. You know, they've saturated Europe, they've saturated Asia, they've saturated the Americas. Obviously, Africa is the next big growth spot. So as much as please bring the money, bring the investment, bring the experience, on our end, we kind of need to be strategic that it's not a case of that just enriches the labels. We have a few rich artists and sorry, that's it. Can you allay some of my fears as to how some of that sweet, sweet international money can also help us and in the media industry here?
Yeah. You know, I want to give you a positive answer to that question, but I'm not. Because the truth is, I mean, if you think about it, right? And let's just try and neutralize our own personal feelings about it for one second.
These are your former bosses, by the way. I just want to remind you.
But anyway. The music industry is complicated in that way, is that these international labels are looking at this market not to create money for this market, but to create money from this market.
Yes.
Because Africa still doesn't have a threshold. I mean, if you ask yourself, right, how many of the 1 billion plus people in Africa, how many people can afford to buy an album to pay full price for a track? So we stream. It's cents that, you know, it's hours and cents. That's kind of how streaming works.
Yeah.
So the area, I mean, even from a promotions point of view, where we make money, where artists make money through live events, gigs, etc., Africa is unable to host or pay top dollar for most of these artists to play on a regular basis and to entertain these audiences. So the best thing for them is to find the best talent in Africa to be able to entertain North America. North America is still the number one music market in the world, and in particular the USA. Mm. Then you've got the UK, Germany, Japan, followed by a couple others. I mean, that makes up more than 60 or 70% of all the music revenue generated, just like three or four countries. So if you're a label and a business person running a label, you go, yeah, you know what? I'm going to find the best artists in Africa. I'm going to try and break them in America or the USA. And that's kind of what they did with Tyler. That's kind of what's happened with Black Coffee. You know, if that doesn't happen, I mean, Trevor Noah is a good example of that, right? He was probably one of the best comedians in Africa. I say one of the best comedians in Africa. But his break in America gave him an opportunity for the whole world to see him and create another value for him. And with music, it's kind of the same thing. To try and sell Tyler, I mean, I think Tyler's sales in Africa are probably nowhere near what it has been in the US. I don't know. I don't know what the numbers are, but that's my estimate, right?
So yeah, yeah. No, it's pretty obvious, I would say, yeah. Along these lines.
So it's like the old days. Sorry, Dan. It's like the old days. It's like, it's no different when in Africa's dark past, unfortunately, when people found minerals and all sorts of great things here. It wasn't for you. They took it out. And that's kind of what the music industry still does.
No, but it was to empower us, Sivan.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Look how enlightened we are now.
along those lines, so one of the things we're going to talk about this week is the news that the Universal Music Group just purchased a majority stake in Nigerian music label, the Mavens. Maven Global is the official name. If you're familiar with Mavens, obviously you'll know it was founded by Don Jazzy. It's got many iconic African artists on it. Probably the hottest African act right now, Rema, Ira Star, several others as well that are on that label. So Universal Music Group just purchased a majority stake for. Let me see if I can find out the amount that was paid for it. The valuation was $125 million. And then the majority stake, I'm not sure exactly how much was paid. I don't think we have those details, but that was the valuation that was given. What we don't know is if publishing is involved in the deal. But this is very interesting to me because I wonder, is this a win for Don Jazzy? I mean, he just got himself something close to $100 million maybe. Comments from UMG chairman and CEO Lucian Grange is our criteria for identifying partners is straightforward. Great artists, great entrepreneurs, great people. With Don Jazzy, Tega, the Maven Global team and their artist roster, we found ideal partners with whom to grow together. Maven's brilliant artists have been catalysts in the transformation of Afrobeats We're going to have a conversation about that term, into a global phenomenon. And we're thrilled to welcome, I can't believe Lucian Grange said Afrobeats. Ugh. To welcome them into the Universal Music Group. Sorry, it's been a thing on this podcast that they gave name. We didn't
tell you.
We didn't tell you it's called Afrobeats. They were like, oh, your genre of music is called Afrobeats. And we were like, thanks for giving us a name to our thing. Anyway. So Maven had already established a relationship with UMG with Rema's Calm Down, the biggest Afrobeat song of all time, which reached number 3 on the Hot 100 last year. Okay, so what are your thoughts? What's your take on this, man? Because if Phil was here, we would have had a back and forth, but I want to hear your thoughts.
I think it does. I mean, listen, if that's the amount, if it's $100 million, if it's $50 million, if it's $10 million, right? I mean, you got to work out any African entrepreneur in the entertainment space, what is their potential to earn that amount of money of any deal in their lifetime? So for Don Jazz, it's a deal of a lifetime. I would imagine...
You haven't met African pastors, I see.
The brighter side of African business. So listen, it's an individual choice, right? I mean, you'll get people saying, oh, well, he sold out. Well, what do you expect him to do? I think it's a great deal, especially we don't know what the details of the deal are. If Universal are planning to invest in more, it means that for the label itself, they have less risk because the capital outlay will come from Universal, mm-hmm. Which means they can develop and find more artists. So there's upsides. I see more upsides than downsides. It means more African artists can be unearthed, broken in global markets. And like Rema, was a young man, become incredibly successful very quickly. That's the potential that lies ahead. And I wouldn't want to stand in the way of that. I think that's fantastic. It's taken maybe 20 years too long for this to happen because initially they'll come take the one artist out as opposed to buying the label. They'll take Rema out because he's most of the value in there right now.
Yeah.
They'll take Rema out and they'll say, okay, we'll sign Rema up, offer him a massive amount of money. Thank you, Don Jazzy. Cheers, guys. But they've said, okay, we understand what you've done here. We're understanding that from a creative point of view, maybe there's something that you guys are doing that we don't know how to do. And that is why this investment would happen. That's my view of why somebody would buy a company, is you can do something we can't do, but let us work with you and we can both benefit together. You benefit more and we benefit more.
So I have many years ago, DeBange went over to the Americas. I think it was it Good Music? I think it was Good Music, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, it was a completely different deal because this is a entire label being signed. But I think it just smacks of a similar sort of overall kind of, oh, you're hot in Africa right now. We're trying to get into Africa. So
it's a quick fix.
We're just going to buy you. Boom, we're in Africa.
I think they can't mask it in anything else, but it's a quick fix. Because can you argue, and you probably can, and I'm sure many people listening to this will probably say, yeah, but the 4 or 5 other labels were just as good.
Yeah.
Why not them? So.
Well, I mean, you know, you just pick one that's doing well, one that you have a relationship with. I can understand that. It is obviously, like you said, it's obviously going to be profitable for UMG. And I think it's a good move, honestly, because now here they have already existing infrastructure, African music, they have artists and so on, that they can then now expose to American audiences who are clearly very interested in African music at the moment. So quick win. I'm wondering how quick of a win it is for Nigeria as a whole, for example. Will that boost music in Nigeria?
It could, or it couldn't. It could if Universal say to Maven label, listen, we're going to put aside X amount of money for your A&R. Go and find more of this and the best Nigerian artists and bring them to the stable. Mm. Yeah, then the answer is yes. But if they don't do that, and if they leave it to the label to organically try and find it and only back them when they've made a hit or found a hit, then it's the same old structure, right? We're using Africa for its talent and not to try and monitor. But if Maven becomes successful and is able to expand beyond just Nigeria and building a sound and different sounds and whatever may come up in the future throughout Africa, then I think this could be a success story. But it has to tick all those boxes. And the answer is we don't know. Hmm. We simply don't know.
So if I do sound like I'm being a bit negative, I'm just being devil's advocate. Obviously, this is...
No, those are good questions. I think those are questions that not just you, but I think all kind of radio DJs or presenters, music industry people, independent labels, artists themselves continuously ask, debate, and talk about. That's kind of the big thing. Because if you're in a business where it is your primary talent and your core talent as a human being, and if you're unable to make a decent living from that particular talent, you have the right to ask those questions. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you see that your equivalent in other places are not making way more than just a living. So I'm happy about this development. Don't get me wrong. I think, it's so cool. People in the world are paying attention to African music. In fact, Universal Music Group are like, we can invest. We don't know what the full figure is. I was just using estimates that were based on the evaluation of what.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah. So I don't know how much they paid, but the Maven Group evaluated or were evaluated to be about 125 million. So if UMG acquired.
Yeah, I suppose we're going to divide that by about probably 10 or something like that then, because that's a self-evaluation.
Well, they say it wasn't a self-evaluation, but anyway, it's I'm reading this.
I don't know. Like, I don't want to throw shade there, but like, I truly don't know what the number is.
So I'm reading, let me just give you the background. I'm reading this article from billboard.com. This came from them, where they say Billboard reported back in October that Shot Tower Capital had made an evaluation of the Maven Group at somewhere north of 125 million with a sale price in the region of 150 to 200 million. However, so now if we hear the news that Universal Music Group bought a majority stake, maybe we can try and figure out what the figure is there. Maybe we're talking about something close to 100 million. But I agree with you. Yeah. This is just evaluation figures. I don't know what the final figure is, but I don't think it's too far from impossible. I mean, if they've got Rema, Ira Star, Crayon, who's coming up hot right now, who had what in my opinion, you know, probably the hottest pop song in Africa this year with Ngozi. Yo, I mean, it's possible.
So. Yeah, it is possible. It also depends. I mean, Maven, if it's just a record company, but I assume it's a publishing company as well. Yeah. And there's probably maybe more value in the publishing company than the record company, to be honest.
They didn't mention anything about publishing. While we're on Universal, this is something that I can't remember if we spoke about. I think we briefly touched on it a couple of weeks ago. So UMG are having a big fight with TikTok at the moment. I don't know if you've paid attention at all to that.
Yes, no. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So for those of you who haven't heard the story, or don't remember when we spoke about it, Universal Music Group and TikTok are, to use parlay from the streets, beefing. Long story short, they both say different things. Universal Music Group are saying, oh no, TikTok is taking advantage of our artists and we want just a fair, equitable distribution and da-da-da-da. Meanwhile, TikTok are saying, yo, they're greedy. They want us to pay them way more money than what happens. Of course, for those of you who may know the background of TikTok, TikTok is primarily music-based. In fact, it was founded from Musical.ly, which was fully a music platform that was, I think it was something to do with lip-syncing back in the day. Very popular platform. TikTok grew out of that. I think there were some acquisitions that were made. And TikTok now, one of the biggest things about TikTok is you attach music to your videos. And many hit songs right now have appeared from the realm of TikTok. So Universal Music Group claim that over half of all songs being played on TikTok right now are theirs. It could be either directly under their label or through publishing, or it could be through a featured artist or writer or composer, or whatever the case is. TikTok, I think I don't have the exact article here, but TikTok in a response said, actually it's somewhere between 20 and 30%. And TikTok are like, listen, if you don't want to play ball, we'll just take your songs off the platform. So right now, any music that is available or any music from UMG is not available on TikTok. Of course, it's a little bit more difficult to do because people have their own original sounds that they make and sometimes the songs.
But I think there might be a kind of algorithm in there or that can actually pick up the songs and like YouTube has and can probably disallow. I don't know, but I think that's kind of how it will work.
Yeah. And I mean, there's big names. That means you can't get Taylor Swift music on TikTok at the moment. It means you can't get Bad Bunny. You can't get The Weeknd. Some of the biggest names in music are technically, or are supposed to not be available on TikTok at the moment. This is interesting because I'm not sure whose side I'm on. On the one hand, TikTok uses 30-second, maybe shorter, maybe longer snippets of music. They want to arrange a license to pay for those. TikTok is beneficial to most artists. The biggest artists in the world don't necessarily get a benefit from TikTok. I don't think. Maybe they do a little bit of promo, but in general, if you're a lesser known artist, maybe you've just signed a publishing deal. Maybe you've just, you've got yourself one of the cookie cutter templates that are available from the different publishers in the world. And your thoughts are, listen, I'm going to make that hit song on TikTok. Ooh, this one got 1 million streams. I'm on my way there. You know what I'm saying? So TikTok is a big deal for you to get out into the world. But for someone who's already out in the world, I would imagine it's more of an annoyance that, ugh, my music is being streamed for almost free on TikTok when I should be making money out of it. What's your take on this?
Listen, I mean, both sides have a right to be, or to have a beef with the other one. Mm. But it's like kind of, it's not even a chicken and egg story, right? TikTok has 1.5 billion users.
Yeah.
So back insane. In the day, let's go back to the 90s. Mm. I think it's more than 1.5 now. In 96, 97, the global music industry reached its peak in terms of total revenue yield, right? So let's call the late 90s the peak of the music industry.
Okay.
If I told you then, and I said to you as a label manager, Danny, I'm going to take your song and I'm going to put it on TikTok. I have 1.5 billion users. But for me to do that, I'm going to charge you. So you, the record company, is going to pay me to play it. Otherwise, I won't do it because I've got the audience. Yeah. You need my audience to sell your records, right? Those days, we're still selling physical copies.
Yes.
So the record companies sit back. They see Musical.ly. And that's the point. Technically speaking, if they really wanted to have an argument, when Musical.ly was being done, that's the point. They said, guys, actually, you should be paying for these songs. Instead, they left it. Why did they leave it? And then they allowed it to evolve and become this massive thing. And now they go, well, TikTok must have money. Let's go there. And this is kind of what the music industry has done all the way along with platforms like YouTube or any other platform, is they wait for these platforms to succeed, build up a massive critical mass in terms of audience. Everyone starts to enjoy it. They want to come ruin the party. So I think, Universal Music, nice to have an argument, take a back step. A large part of why your artists are so successful, why your concerts are getting filled up, why Taylor Swift can sell out a US tour is because TikTok exists. And you can argue that without TikTok, it'll be much, much harder to do that. Because this is where the attention economy is at. We did some numbers in terms of young people, and that 60% of the world, their world is TikTok. It's very little that exists outside of that. So when you're looking at all these new music genres, music relies on young people being able to listen to it because they're the ones that spread the word, engage with the music, buy the music, go to the concerts, buy the merch.
Young people are important, I will say.
Us, you young people. Yeah, I'm old enough. But I'm saying, I mean, that's kind of the thing. So you kind of need each other. Find the balance. TikTok is not saying we don't want to pay. They're saying we're going to pay. But what you're asking for is ridiculous. It's greedy. And they are correct.
I want to read TikTok's statement. This came out 2 weeks ago. Yeah. They posted it on their website, newsroom.tiktok.com. TikTok statement in response to Universal Music Group. It is sad and disappointing that Universal Music Group has put their own greed above the interests of their artists and songwriters.
There you go.
That's insane. Despite Universal's false narrative and rhetoric, the fact is they have chosen to walk away from the powerful support of a platform with well over a billion users that serves as a free promotional and discovery vehicle for their talent. TikTok has been able to reach artist-first agreements with every other label and publisher. Clearly, Universal's self-serving actions are not in the best interests of artists, songwriters, and fans.
Well, there you go. I just said exactly that. And also, the important part of that statement is that all the other players are kind of in agreement with TikTok. They found a way to find a symbiosis because they realize that they need each other.
This was in a response to Universal's open letter to the artists and songwriter community. Why we must call time out on TikTok. This one is much longer. And it's...
This is because they... This is also to premise this. This is because they care so much, right?
Of course, yeah. So they say, obviously they start off by saying, oh no, we partner with people around the world. One of those partners is TikTok, an increasingly influential platform, with powerful technology and a massive worldwide user base. As with many other platforms with whom we partner, TikTok's success as one of the world's largest social platforms has been built in large part on the music created by our artists and songwriters. Its senior executives proudly state publicly that music is at the heart of the TikTok experience. Our analysis confirms that the majority of content on TikTok contains music more than any other major social platform. The terms of our relationship with TikTok are set by contract, which expires January 31, 2024. So it's already expired. In our contract renewal discussions, we've been pressing them on three critical issues: appropriate compensation for our artists and songwriters, protecting human artists from the harmful effects of AI, and online safety for TikTok's users. So obviously TikTok's response was like, nah, this was greed. So I guess it depends on who you believe. In the end, they say, ultimately, TikTok is trying to build a music-based business without paying fair value for the music. I found this very interesting because they shared some details. They said, TikTok proposed paying our artists and songwriters at a rate that is a fraction of the rate that similarly situated major social platforms pay. Today, as an indication of how little TikTok compensates artists and songwriters, despite its massive and growing user base, rapidly rising advertising revenue, and increasing reliance on music-based content, TikTok accounts for only about 1% of our total revenue. So ultimately, TikTok.
I just don't see where they're coming from. But you know what? It's all a lot of nonsense, and it is rhetoric. That's what it is. Because in the end of the day, let's assume R1 was available to the artist. Danny, you are the artist. You've earned R1 in TikTok revenue. It goes, your label is Universal Music. What percentage of, the key question is, what percentage of the R1 do you get? I can tell you.
Well,
it's a very small amount. It's not the majority, it's the minority amount. So they're not doing this for the artists, they're doing it for themselves. The deals with the artists and globally, and this is a massive issue, when there were physical copies of CDs and cassettes and vinyls kind of being sold, the artist's share was based on what was called a PPD, or price per disc, percentage. Like 10%, 12%, 14% for really good artists, you know, that's what they kind of get. But that kind of, that share stayed the same for digital, but digital doesn't have the same cost of production or cost of distribution. But yet they're charging. So the record companies are creaming. They earn the majority off from that IP that's made by an artist, by that talent. They get the majority of that revenue. So they're not fighting for any artists. They're fighting for themselves. And the time it takes for them or their publishing companies to pay these artists,
harsh,
in most cases, outside of the big artists, is incredibly long.
Anecdotally, I don't know for sure, but just judging from most of the responses I've seen, most people seem to be more mad at Universal than they are at TikTok.
If there was a balance, what, 60-40, 70-30?
I just saw like seven people. So like all seven were talking about Universal. No one said, no, but TikTok must pay more. Because I think, like you said, maybe TikTok must pay more, but they have the leverage, as in, we have a billion people.
Yeah.
We could be pure advertising. No. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, think about it. They stop playing all Universal Music on TikTok. TikTok carries on. The next announcement, TikTok reaches 2 billion users.
Well, I do think it will hurt TikTok not to have the biggest artists available on them.
Yeah, sure. But TikTok has evolved into something else. It's not really about music anymore. It says music is a part, is a component of it. But video has become, and for the digital creator, it's become a digital creator economy. And that's kind of what TikTok is to, I think, most of the world now. And that's evolving into richer media. And you're getting some of the best talent, comedy, and other areas, speakers, people who are just creative people, having the potential now to create these channels or these platforms or these audiences on TikTok, which and they're thriving on it. E-commerce is thriving on TikTok. So it's not just about music anymore. And it's arrogant to think that it's only about music. I think it's about a lot more than just music now. It's become a content platform. And it's also become an education platform. So I don't know. Good luck to Universal. I mean, it's too late. As I said, if they wanted to sue TikTok or have this beef, when it was Musical.ly, and people were singing songs, published songs, that's the point they should have had, for me, as a, from an IP perspective, they should have had the problem then. But now it's too late.
while we're still on Universal, I can't believe we've spoken so much about Universal. I don't even know if I want to go down this route. So anyway, our producer here in our talking points has the story of Diddy.
Oh, goodness. Oh my goodness, even the question is it's forming an
arc. It's not even a question. I just want to phrase it correctly. All right. So, Sean Diddy Combs is being sued yet again, this time by a certain Rod Jones, who's seeking $30 million, Rodney Jones, aka Lil Rod, who's seeking $30 million in this lawsuit. He's not only against Diddy himself, but he also names Diddy's son, Justin, his chief of staff, Christina Quorum, Universal Music Group CEO, Lucian Grange, and former Motown Records CEO, Ethiopia. I'm not even going to try to pronounce his surname. As well as several other record labels. The others are mentioned because apparently they allowed Diddy to continue and never stopped him, even though they knew what he was doing. So he claims. And basically in this claim, he says that between, and this is not from long ago, because we've been hearing stories about, back in the day, this is literally from last year, between September 2022 and November 2023, Rod Jones claims that he was repeatedly a victim of sexual harassment and subjected to unwanted advances by associates of Diddy at his direction. It actually gets quite bad when they talk about how he was, for example, forced to work in his bathroom as the mogul showered nude. And he says when he complained, like, yo, I can't work with, naked man around me. He's like, yeah, no, Sean will be Sean. Apparently that's what his chief of staff said. He alleges that he was being groomed for sex. He was encouraged to recruit prostitutes. He tells a story about how someone was shot in his presence, and then he was instructed to cover it up. Yeah, it's pretty damning story. And once again, actually, I wasn't going to speak about this, but the fact that UMG once again mentioned in this, I thought we were already on it. Again, I'm not against Universal Music Group. And if I sound negative, I'm only being a devil's advocate. Overall, obviously extremely, extremely influential body in the world of music. This Diddy story, what is there left to say about Diddy that hasn't already been said, man?
Listen, I don't know. I think the guy doesn't know how not to attract trouble. Or controversy, but I think, this is, there's a few other artists who are like this, where it just always comes down to, they're going to be targets. You make a decision, whether it's a good decision, a bad decision at the time, 10 years later, something unfolds, it turns out to be a bad decision. I don't know, I think...
You can't talk about good decisions, bad decisions when you're... Why?
No. It can happen. Listen, Kevin Hart just recently went through something. He said something 15 or 10 years ago, and now the woke generation picks it up and says, oh my God, when he was 15 years old, he said this. He was 15.
That's
for
different.
The love of God.
I will be first in line to defend Kevin Hart for something he said when he was 15. But I refuse.
No, I'm not defending P. Diddy. Yeah. I'm definitely not defending him. But what I'm saying is that they kind of attract these things. And for him, his career, there's a lot of other allegations and things surrounding which are not kind of, but it's very, very murky, and it paints a very, very dark picture of who this individual is.
Yeah.
And this kind of seems to be a constant story coming through the dark underworld of entertainment, that some of these guys, while having these incredible public figures, are something else behind the scenes.
Did you ever find yourself having to deal with artists and so on who without naming names, but who had this sort of dark part about their personality? And obviously I'm imagining working at a label, for example, or working somewhere where you have to get this person's art and work out. Your business model depends on this person making good music or good movies or good films or whatever the case is, but meanwhile there's all this stuff in their closet that's like a problem. Is that something you've ever had to deal with?
Listen, I think it comes with the territory, but it comes with, I think, a degree of fame and adulation. Where it's a very addictive thing. If you speak to musicians who perform live and perform to big audiences, and I'm a musician, I know this. It's an incredible feeling, and it's a hard thing to maintain. So what happens is they get to a point where they need constant validation, and it can become desperate, it can be desperation, but that constant need for validation and acknowledgement is, I don't know, it's a psychological thing. And many artists quite often stay, especially successful artists, stay down this path at some point or the other. And it's very difficult. The person I feel for the most, I always think of Michael Jackson's career, and I think since he was a kid, I don't think he had a single moment where he was not part of the public eye. And I just try to imagine, that must have been horrible all the way through. Not, you can't make a single mistake. I mean, think about it, as human beings, you and I, right? I mean, you're much younger than me, so you've had less time to make bigger mistakes, but you can make errors in judgment here and there in your life and in things. But if you're a celebrity, you make that and suddenly the whole world knows. You can't even pick your nose without it being on some front page or somewhere. I mean, just try and imagine living a life like that. So I think it becomes difficult for these guys. It doesn't exonerate them from understanding the difference between right and wrong. Yeah. That's what I say.
I think I do think you're right that I heard a take about Diddy, which was basically all his life, right? His whole thing was proving just how much of a risk taker he is. And each time he feels like he's made of Teflon because he always comes out on the other side on top, always comes out on the other side on top. At some point, from when he's very young, obviously, you know what I mean? At some point, your decision-making is no longer, you know, you're less concerned about, hey, maybe I shouldn't do this because of consequences, because there's no consequences. I'm untouchable. I can do anything. And I don't say this in the eye or in the vein of I'm a villain. I can do anything. I just mean, what does it do to your brain if you genuinely think there's no consequences to anything I do?
I think that's constant across the business world, the sports world, yeah, and the music world, the entertainment world.
Yeah.
Just recently, you've seen the whole Red Bull thing unfolding, right?
These CEOs.
It's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
What's going on with Red Bull? Whoa! Yeah, no,
but it reeks of the same thing. I think you get to a certain level of power, money, and you feel, well, I can do whatever I want. And I think the R. Kelly situation was exactly the same, by the way. Getting for him to get his mind to the point where you think, I can do whatever I want. And what he did was ridiculous. So, you know, he's not paying the penalty for that. But how did these guys get there? I mean, think about how much money they had at the time they made this choice. They had the money to make any choice they wanted to, yet they made the choice that was wrong. And you go, I would never have made that choice.
Yeah.
But the true answer is, once again, you don't know until you are there and actually dealing with it.
I also think the other thing that I know, because Phil mentioned this when we were discussing it in the Patreon group. The problem here that, by the way, Meek Mill got caught up in this whole thing because while he was not name dropped, the court document said a Philadelphia rapper who used to date Nicki Minaj. So everyone's like,
we're basically zoning from there.
And then they were like an R&B singer who recently performed at the Super Bowl and had a residency in Vegas. It's clearly Usher.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a lot of people, the biggest story about this was the fact that they're gay. But that's not the story. That's not the story. Like, forget about that for a second. The problem here is the allegations of non-consensual and worse than that, like full-on assault levels. That's what the worry is, right?
That's the dark side where it becomes so dark that it got to that point of that level of decision making. And if you get there and you're thinking, well, there are no consequences at the moment where that's happening, surely you must be thinking there has to be consequences for that. And yes, you're still going ahead. But I just want to cut back to something else, right? Just to give you an idea when we think all these things are so bad. So in the time of Genghis Khan was a notorious conqueror and world dominator at the time, one of the most powerful men of his time.
Yeah.
Commanded a large army, came across Asia into Europe. So the story is that Genghis Khan fathered over 6,000 children. So most European men in the world today, in fact, almost all, carry the Genghis Khan marker in their DNA.
Look, it was a different time. Right? You know what I'm saying? It was a different time.
But I'm saying, trying to imagine, right? 6,000 children. I would imagine that almost none of them were consensual.
Yeah.
So I mean, they're not Genghis Khan level or biblical levels, but yes, it's still bad. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone's ever watched like Game of Thrones or something, you know.
Yeah, but here's the thing, right? We watch Game of Thrones. How's this? We watch Game of Thrones, and this is how Hollywood paints pictures, right? And about rhetoric and how things, perception can change things. Everybody who complains about this and says, okay, this is bad. Of course it is. We know that from the difference between right and wrong, this is wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
However, we watch our hero in Game of Thrones, the chief protagonist, take his aunt. And then we go, wow, well done, son. Like, I mean, that's where the...
At least I it mean, was it's the consensual. Same
people going, like, Usher, what's up, bro?
At least it was consensual, you know? I'll take the small wins.
Do you remember there's a movie called Monty Python, The Life of Brian? If you've ever watched this,
Monty
right?
Python, but it's been a while. Which one is this one?
The Life of Brian. But The Life of Brian is a story about where this guy is mistaken for Jesus. They think Brian is Jesus, right? So the Romans come storming into his house and his mom says, Brian, there's something I need to tell you, right? About your father. Now, at the moment, Brian assumes immediately, says, oh my God, you were raped by the Romans. Mm. Says, well, at first, but then you get it like this. So, but that was in, I mean, Monty Python was made in the 80s, right? Or something like that. It was funny then, but that has aged so badly.
I would like to apologize to everyone who heard me laugh out at that.
I'm just saying it. My point is, it's aged badly. And the world has changed so much. If you watch old comedies now, like Airplane, or even some of the old sitcoms that we watched, they've aged badly. So that's what I'm saying. So some of these things, like if you watch Sean Connery, there's all these things that came up with Sean Connery, how he used to treat women on set, some of the scripts in James Bond. You watch them now, they're awful.
Yeah.
Because it's actually hard to, cringeworthy. You go, oh my God, I can't believe we watched this and we clapped.
Yeah.
So we've got to be careful. My philosophy for this year is be curious, not judgmental. But because the world barometer of what we think is acceptable, not acceptable, does tend to move. And also, we're sitting here talking about this when, honestly, there's a massive genocide happening on one side and kind of no one's paying attention to that there, but we kind of poke. So, you know, like why the Romans created the circus? They created the circus so they can entertain people and take away the attention from all the corruption that was happening
with their governance. You and Phil would get along so well. You and Phil would spend the whole podcast like, yo, you got to understand the man. The man has a distraction and a plan. And what you need to do is open up that third. Your pineal gland is being calcified. The mass calcification of the pineal gland is the greatest travesty. You guys would have lost all our subscribers.
I know. That's it, yeah. But hopefully that was entertaining because I did use some really crude yet very vivid examples of what, you know, how we see the world. Sometimes our lenses are tainted. Not everyone's perfect in that way, you know?
Granted. But. This Diddy situation happened last year, dude.
No. Listen, on the Diddy situation, I don't think anyone can defend him. I think, as I said, for me, there's too many murky rumors and there's just a mist surrounding this guy's entire being, unfortunately.
So, yeah, it's stuck with him for way too much, man. I'm. You know what? I have some very complicated thoughts about the idea of cancel culture. I know it exists, but I don't believe it exists in the way that people think it exists. I know there's definitely people who look to jump on. And I, you know what? I don't want us to go down too far this road because I feel like it's such a waste of a conversation. But I do feel like, I do sometimes feel very defensive of people in the, I'm like, yo, someone said something stupid when they were 15. Like, let it go, man. Or 10 years ago, you said, man, I want to be honest. And this is not a challenge to anyone to go through my Twitter. But honestly, I had to go through my Twitter like, yo, what did I say like 6 years ago? Oh, I can't delete that. Damn, I can't believe I said this. So I completely understand that it's very possible that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, we were thinking, saying different things. And the hope, obviously, is that you grow and you learn and whatever. I don't believe it's the right thing to do to like attack someone because, 10 years ago you said this, or 20 years ago this person in this comedy said this, or, you know, blackface 30 years ago. The understanding that now exists wasn't necessarily there. I don't think that absolves people of wrongdoing. Not at all. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm just trying to say that I understand.
No, listen, Danny, I have a very firm view on this here, because this woke generation and this cancel culture, it's all nonsense. It's bullshit, right? I mean, because everyone talks about the freedom of speech and the ability to be able to express yourself. But with this generation, it's freedom of speech and the ability to express yourself, provided it fits their narrative. It's conditional on their narrative. What they're not willing, I refuse to accept anyone else's reality as my own.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah.
If you went to a restaurant and you were treated mm-hmm. badly by the waiter, and you told someone that you'll never go back to that restaurant because of the way they treated you, would that be a reason? Obviously, it would be reasonable, right? What if that restaurant then felt it's unfair what you've just said about me? I have the right to exist as I am and you are canceling me. Obviously, that's ridiculous. I'm using an extreme example. I'm going to get to a point. Just follow along.
Yeah.
The point of this entire example is to say, as a society in general, we understand the concept of, what's the word? Ostracism. The idea that if one person doesn't like what you do, that person has the right to step away from you and to not associate. If five people don't like what you do, those five people have the right to step away from you and associate and complain about you if they want. Maybe there's three others that do like what you do, but those five can step away. In a village of 50 people, if all 49 people in that village were like, yo, what you did was wild, they have the right to say, we don't want to associate with you anymore. I don't think
I agree.
Let me finish. It's just a thought here. We would accept that as when something is generally viewed as against society, or it's different to what society wants. In general, they have the right to say, we don't like what you did. In general, that's good for a small section of society. Social media has opened us up to a world where it's not five people or 49 people, it's millions potentially that are saying something. And very often it's misunderstood, there's no context, the nuance is gone and so on. But it's really a continuation of the same natural human desire of, I don't agree with you, or I don't like what you said, or I don't like what you did, so I'm distancing myself and I'm complaining about you. It sounds really bad when 1,000, 100,000, 1,000,000 people are saying it at the same time. And now we have the idea of canceled, which exists, but I don't think it's not an institution that exists that is particularly leading the move against, if anyone does what we don't like, they no longer welcome. If the general consensus of people is this, and there's never a general consensus, it's groups, right? So this is my general overview of what is really going on. I do understand in certain situations there's bullying. In certain situations, there's people who go further and they twist narratives and they twist things and they try to make person appear different to how they are. That's not at all what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if Chris Brown goes out and is rumored to have assaulted someone, it's understandable that a group of people will say, yo, we don't like this. It doesn't mean Chris Brown is canceled, in my opinion. So anyway, so that was sort of the long line of reasoning.
Yeah, but I completely get where you're coming from. But here's my view on this. Chris Brown goes out. He insults a person. Yeah. He insults a person because they were rude, right? The person happens to be gay.
Yeah.
The victim then says, he insulted me because I was gay. Then you have 0.01% of the population all going up in arms saying, Chris Brown is homophobic. I'm just giving you an example.
Yeah.
And that's how cancel culture is forming. It's forming on a minority's extreme fundamentalist view and creating the storm. It's not everybody else. If you speak to Chris Brown's fans, say, guys, listen, what's the context of this?
Yeah.
Said, actually, the guy was rude. And, you know, Dave Chappelle's The Closer was a very, very good piece of comedy, right, where it explains this kind of thing. And he explains from his own personal situation, what he went through and what his view on this is. It's really a small percentage of people who have this extreme view who are kind of driving the narrative of the world right now. And it's really dumbing the human race, because these are people who are not enlightened, who are not prepared to look at an opposing view, who are not prepared to see the bigger picture and a bigger narrative other than their own. So your reality, Danny, is even, I mean, if you say, listen, I'm even trying to be neutral, again, you can't be neutral. You're either with me or against me. It's absolution. It's reverts. And social media has created this narrative globally because it's allowed everybody to have a voice. And to be honest, not everyone should, because some people are not that smart and they should not be speaking on any form of media. But it's created mob justice. So whether right or wrong, somebody could be crucified based on that majority polling left or right. I think about it, if it was you, right? If you made a mistake and then suddenly the whole world is judging you and you're going, guys, I made a mistake. I walked on the lawn. I slipped. I accidentally hit the woman in the face. I didn't intend to. I'm a black man. She's now saying I assaulted her. Everyone's saying, well, black men are aggressive. And this is, can you understand how this unfolds? It's the most ridiculous thing.
Okay. Let's not go too far down this road. So for the record, this is what I'm saying. I'm against what you're saying there of bullying, trying to paint someone a certain way, creating false narrative. I'm completely against that. Not at all. What I'm trying to say is, in general, and sometimes it feels like it's the consequence doesn't match the action, but that's because we live on social media where everything is visible to everyone. Under normal circumstances, your mistake is known to a few people, the people who saw it, the people who experienced it, the people around you. You have to deal with the consequences of your mistake. But because of social media, potentially thousands of people are seeing your mistake. And then that amplifies the consequences. And it feels very unfair. In many cases, it is unfair. I don't believe that's in most cases, it's not what you describe, which is the cancel culture that you describe, where someone is twisting the narrative and making it seem like this and then saying, in most cases, it's literally lots of people are reacting negatively as a consequence to your actions, which is expected. Yeah. In fact, not only expected, it's probably fair. The fact that it's so amplified by so many people is what makes it sound louder and but then there are other situations, of course, and those are always the ones that hurt the most, and that, you know, that people really focus on, where you know, the hypothetical situation that you described, which I sincerely hope is not anything that you did or happened to you.
No, I'm just saying. I use that like an extreme example because, in South Africa some years back, there was a woman named Penny Sparrow, who was an unfortunate victim. She referred to black people and used the reference of monkeys in a tweet. And I can tell you, I mean, the consequences, I mean, she was charged and she was found guilty. And it kind of destroyed her life. And you go, okay, did the punishment fit the action? You know, she was an older white person who kind of had a narrative, probably even at the time, didn't understand how bad that action was, but it had a disastrous action. But years where it went pear-shaped for me. Penny maybe deserved the punishment. Maybe, I would say that. But then Penny's children, Penny's family, Penny's associate, everything around her was kind of all just felt through. You know, because they were associated to that. And I just felt for the poor kid who actually, if she had a kid,
I was about to say you're making it really difficult for me to feel any kind of sympathy for Penny. But now when you mention that, her kid, her family, her anyone associated with her, that's true. That now feels like it's
that
going
kid was innocent, and then suddenly the kid has now become a victim of a no income household, also being labeled and bullied and being ostracized in society because they were born as the child of this person. And that I find lacks reason, I think. And that's where this whole thing becomes blurry. Because I can't change it. I don't think you can. But that's the way it is, you know, at the moment.
Yeah, no. It's going to get worse. I mean, just look at general narratives happening in the world. It's going to be extreme versus extreme.
Yeah.
All right, man. Maybe just a couple of other quick things. Something a little bit light.
This was not okay. Yeah, this I suppose was.
Yeah, yeah. Just
not as light.
Quick pivot, you know. So I don't know if you saw the trending story about Omar Lay's concert.
No, I haven't actually.
Okay, let me give you the background information.
Yeah,
Omar Lay was performing live at a concert. Now I've been to an Omar Lay concert. Part of his act is he invites one of his female fans onto the stage to dance with him.
Oh, I thought you said this was going lighter, but anyway, let's go.
This is not a line dance, nor is it you know, step dancing. This is dancing. You know what I'm saying?
This is bump and grind.
This is So anyway, I don't know if you came across the story, but long story short, they were at this show. He called up some lady who came up and had a serious dance. You know what I'm saying? They did a whole silhouette while she grinded up on him, whatever. And then a lot of people were recording, and then they started zooming in on apparently the man that she had come to the concert with, who was watching with what I can only describe as a dead look on his face.
Horror.
I think by then he had passed horror. He was now a shell of a man. And
acceptance.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously that led to the usual discourse. I'm on Twitter a lot. And, led to the usual discourse back and forth. I would never do this. Ah, men should be secure. Back and forth, right? And then she then came out with a statement of her own where she was basically saying, I've been called all kinds of things. I'm going to come speak my truth. You know, we actually had a conversation before it happened. Like, what if he calls me on stage? And we actually said, I'll go. I know you should go, babe. So I did. And then I think she then says, now I kind of regret. I wish I hadn't, because the way... You know, the narrative has come out afterwards.
It played out, yeah.
Then he comes out, I think they broke up. And then he comes out, he was on Kai Cenat's live stream, choosing a new girlfriend, someone who will be loyal to you this time and won't treat you that way and blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, she then came out with, it's just become a whole thing, right? So I don't want, we're not that kind of podcast, but just as out of interest, I want to judge how secure you are as a man.
I'm with the lady on this one. Yeah, if they've discussed it previously, I think your man is going to be more secure. I mean, in the end of the day, right? Did she leave the concert with the artist and he get on his jet? No, she came back.
I don't think she had to. At that point, she just had to clean herself off and come back down. Okay, I'm exaggerating, but
no, I think. Listen, this is the age old debate, right, about security of men. I think in general we live in a society of many insecure men. And it makes it very difficult for women. It sometimes makes it very difficult for men too. But if you go to a concert, if you've, in this particular case, they've had a discussion saying, what if he calls me on stage? Then, man, you've got to prepare. You can't. If you said a firm no, like if he calls you on stage, you better back down.
Yeah.
Fair enough, right? But he didn't. So she thought at that moment, okay, you know what? This is happening. Obviously, would she have known what's going to go down the stage? Absolutely not. You're in the moment in front of thousands of people.
Yeah, you're not going to back. You're not going to be like, nay, I have a man. Don't touch me. You know.
If he gave her a bass guitar, she would have bloody played it. That's what I'm saying. This is how it is, right?
Very interesting. Anyway, it was just
there was a bass guitar of any kind. It's not a metaphor for anything else.
So thank you, man. I did promise that I'd only have you for an hour. It's been past that now, but I figured we could just just talking a little bit about your new ventures. Zero Gravity is the new thing that you're working on. I read a quick article. I don't know if I'm supposed to share this, but it's already out there. This is on Variety.com.
Oh, Variety, yeah.
Was that like a surprise when that came out?
No. No, it wasn't. Okay. It was very carefully curated to ensure it was not a surprise. So the intention was that would become public knowledge on 1st March.
So to quote you in this article, former Endemol Shine Africa and Trace Studio CEO Sivan Pillay says he will be teaming up with South African media giant Prime Media to relaunch multiple new high-end unscripted formats, including the hit series The Masked Singer, Deal or No Deal, and Ready, Steady, Cook. That's pretty cool. All right, so what are you guys working on?
Well, I'm not working on Deal or No Deal. the Masked Singer or Red Steady Cook. I think he used that as specifically mentioned them,
according to this article.
No, I think that's slightly, yeah. So you didn't get that right, because we're actually not working on those shows at all. But Prime Media is definitely doing those shows.
Yeah.
But I am planning to bring back certain massive shows. As you can imagine, I'm a music man.
Yeah.
So they're music-related shows. But the idea is that to bring them into the public and free-to-air domain. That's kind of the strategy for this. So I think the announcements will be made very shortly, probably in the month of April or so. But I mean, if I can talk about the first one I'm releasing, it's not with Prime Media, but we're working on a show called Gospel Superstar, which we go into production with in April. And that will be aired on a South African broadcast, ETV, later this year. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the first step. You know, historically, I've made a lot of talent shows in Africa, a lot of music talent shows. I love it because I love the music. I love the cultures. I love what Africa can bring to entertainment. So I think the idea is to do a few South African shows, build these brands, and then bring them into the African domain, especially now that we have players like Amazon, Netflix, and other ISVOD platforms that can take it to the world.
Hmm. Very cool. Very cool. We're looking forward to it. So you mentioned Gospel Superstar. So, listen, man, personally, not a fan of gospel music, but I know there are plenty of people who are. So for those who are looking out for it, look out for it on ETV. Anything else that your production company is working on that we should keep an eye on, look out for? You know, what's really cool, when it eventually comes out, some are like, oh, wait, no, I heard him talking about this a while back, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, there's a few big things. I think, one of the things I'm really trying to ensure that we get back by the end of the year is to bring Idols back. That's kind of one of the big shows that we're obviously focusing on. And Idols has been a very successful show in South Africa for years, but it's always been on our pay TV broadcaster. So it was a very small audience that watched it. And I think the idea is to bring it back and have it on a massive platform that goes all over Africa now. So that's, it's exciting because I think the possibility once again to unearth more mavens and the like can exist because of shows like this. Yeah. You know, it's never been leveraged. I kind of know how to leverage this, and especially with one of the key targets of our export being North America and Europe, is that through content, the demand of music is built into content. And if we'd make the right content with the right music, we'd start to export our culture in a very different way, you know? And that's kind of the ambition of this company is to do exactly that.
Mm. Very cool. Matt, we'll be looking out for it. All the best in your endeavors.
Thanks,
David. Yeah. All the best. I'm sure it will come out, as they say. All right, cool. We normally wrap it up with some music. Is there anything that you're feeling at the moment? Anything you're currently listening to? Something that you love?
No, but I think to keep it in theme, I think Rema's Calm Down is kind of one of my, I think that's, it's so iconic. This song, when it first came out, just as a side note, it's a feeling that the song gives anyone who listens to it. It's really an amazing piece of art. That's what I think. So, yeah.
With Selena Gomez or without?
Without.
Correct answer.
I didn't know that was a test.
No, it wasn't a test. I'm just messing with it. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you for having me, man.
Thank you so much, Stefan. Thank you for finding time in your very busy schedule. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for tuning in. Once again, just a quick reminder, if you'd like to support the podcast, twobroketwimbles.com/donate. Otherwise, you can find all our other episodes on twobroketwimbles.com. You can simply subscribe to it on whatever app you love to listen to podcasts on. And I think this was a very great conversation. Some very interesting takes. I can't wait to hear what some people are going to say based on what we've been talking about over here. If people want to find you, you make music as Eskimo Writer.
The Eskimo Writer.
Very cool. Go check him out. The Eskimo Writer. Check out some of his music. And in the meantime, look out for his work on ETV, Gospel Superstar, and their Idols, hopefully coming soon to a broadcaster near you. Thank you very much, Sivan Pillay, former CEO of Trace Studios, now CEO of Zero Gravity.
TV and media. Yeah, it's probably a mouthful. Zero Gravity, I think, will do.
Cool. Thanks so much for agreeing to this, man.
Cheers, mate.
All good.
Thanks, Danny. Look forward to seeing you soon. Yeah.
Later, man.
All right. Cheers, man. Bye-bye.
All right, that's pretty much it. Please, Crims producer, throw on that request from Sivan for Calm Down. And yeah, this count this as a bonus episode because we couldn't get Phil on here. And this was me just taking advantage of a new contact that I met down in South Africa. And I hope you enjoy it. Should this be an exclusive? No, you know what? All of you can get this, I think. Yeah, it'll be available for all of you. And if the sound is a bit funny, sorry, man. I have a different setup here that I still need to figure out. All right. Much peace and love. Thank you very much once again to Sivan Pillay. Shout out to all of you who are listening. And a huge shout out, of course, to our patrons as per usual. On that note, we out.
Somebody put in my heart for lockdown, oh lockdown. Girl, you sweet life, Fanta, Fanta. If I tell you, say I love you, no day for me, young girl, oh young girl. No tell me, no, 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 oh, 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 baby, gon' give me your lo, 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 oh, 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 oh. You got me like, whoa, 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 whoa. Shawty gon' give me your lo, 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 lo. Then I start to feel a bum bum one. She dey give me small small one. I know, say she's a